This will probably be a two-parter video, so let's go with the second part, and that'll be a focus on the Czech Republic. And they had elections, parliamentary elections. And the interesting part about these elections is the Pandora Papers seem to have played a role in the results of these elections. And basically what we have, Alexander, is the Czech center-right opposition group called Together is looking like it will beat the Prime Minister Andrej Babiš's ANO party. And one of the main reasons, one of the main driving forces of this defeat by Babiš is because of allegations in those Pandora's papers, which, as we have reported on the Duran, on your channel, on my channel, we've been talking about the papers in detail, literally broke six days ago. So here you have it. The Pandora papers break. We did a lot of talking about, we focused on Putin and what they revealed there about Vladimir Putin, but bam, it looks like they have taken out the Prime Minister in the Czech Republic. What do you make of this?
Right. Well, I think that we have to be very, worldly in understanding these elections. We've previously talked about what happened in Austria with Sebastian Kurz, and I'm going to suggest this is exactly the same thing with a slightly different twist. But it's very similar, in fact, if you really take a step back and think this thing through. Firstly, it's important to stress that to the extent that there is was a Eurosceptic government in the Czech Republic, Babiš, the Prime Minister, embodied it. The second thing to say, and this is relating to the Pandora Papers, is that Babiš is an extremely successful businessman, a billionaire, if you like. That such a person should be doing things offshore is completely unremarkable. And so far as I am aware, there is no actual allegation of wrongdoing against him. I mean, very rich people, business people, billionaires do things offshore. It comes with the territory. So again, when we see the information in the Pandora Papers being used in a particular way, then we have to understand that there is probably some kind of an agenda here. But it goes beyond this, because this coalition government that Babiš was leading depended, it was a coalition, it was made up of his party. It also included the Social Democratic Party, which is a left-wing party, a very old party in the Czech Republic. And it also included what was left of the former Communist Party that was left over from the previous era. Now, the Communists and the Social Democrats within the Czech Republic, well, certainly the Communists were Eurosceptic and Russophile. Social Democrats tended to be vaguely Russophile too. They are the parties, as I said, that propped up Babiš. Babiš has the Eurosceptic coalition. There is talk about Babiš getting together with Orban and Duda of Poland, and there was talk about the three of them having together a summit meeting, in which they were going to take coordinated positions on EU integration and on immigration and those sort of topics. So what we see happen over the previous few months is, firstly, there is an extraordinary, very bizarre scandal about involving expulsions of large numbers of Russian diplomats from Prague. This is all about some explosion in a warehouse that took place more than a decade ago. If you remember Bushirov and Petrov, the two Laurel and Hardy figures who were involved in the Skripal affair, they're involved in all of that as well. What happens is that the Social Democrats, who control the Interior Ministry and who are, if you like, the weak link in Babiš's coalition, because they're their left wing and vaguely Russophile, or at least their part of their base is vaguely Russophile, they are also the most pro-EU part of the coalition. They run with this story. They accept the truth of all of these allegations. They campaign to get all of these Russian diplomats expelled. Relations between the Czech Republic and Russia are exploded. The Russophile base of these two parties that are propping up the coalition, the Communists and the Social Democrats, are antagonized. They refused, therefore, to vote for the government that has done this thing. The Communist and Social Democrat votes collapse. And then just ahead of the election, we get the further twist of the knife, which is this publication of the Pandora Papers and this big campaign around Babish's entirely normal, uncontroversial offshore activities, which, as I said, he's after all a billionaire. So the result is he loses. And the result is he not only loses, but he loses in a way that will bring a very pro-EU party into power in Brussels. I mean, in Prague, we're talking about these being centre-right parties. But to be very clear, they are pro-EU parties. And the alliance, this grouping that was starting to emerge of Hungary, the Czech Republic and Poland, has now been shattered. That there is, I mean, I cannot imagine that this summit meeting that Orbán was planning will go ahead. So they've picked off the Czech Republic as they prepare to move on against Poland and perhaps Hungary as well. So again, it's deftly done. You whip up a spy scandal, so easy to do now. You find the weak link in the coalition chain, the party that will play along with that because they want to prove to the people in Brussels, you know, that really we're on your side. We might be in coalition with Babish and the communists, but we're really actually part of your side. And then, of course, you bring in these revelations about Babish's business activities, and then you bring the whole thing tumbling down. And that's what's happened.
Well, buckle up, Alexander. It gets better with the Czech Republic. And then we're going to talk about Poland and Hungary real quick. So let me take you to the picture here as to what's going on in the Czech Republic with the votes. And I'm pulling this from RT. They are saying that 99% of the ballots counted. The center-right together coalition, this is the key word, it's a coalition, has taken 27.69% of the vote, a hair above the 27.23% taken by Babish's ANO party, ANO or ANO, I hope I pronounced that correctly. So it's a coalition, the Together Coalition, which is the Together with Pirates and the Mayor's Coalition. Okay, so this is the group that is a hair above Babish. Okay, so what you have now is that this coalition, Together, Pirates and Mayors, they've landed so far, according to these results, 108 seats in the 200-seat lower house. But President Miloš Zeman has promised Babish the first shot at forming a government if the ANO wins the most seats, which it technically did, given that Together is a coalition of three smaller parties. Nevertheless, Together leader Peter Fiala and the Pirates mayor leader Ivan Bartos have both stated that they will begin talks aimed at forming a government without Babish's involvement. And it remains unclear whether Zeman will go back on his word. Breaking news that came in today, Czech President Zeman admitted to intensive care. Yep, 77-year-old politician was hospitalized, with media speculating that his health was in a rapid decline. Well, however, PM Babish denied these rumors, citing Zeman's attending physician. We'll figure out exactly what's going on with Zeman. It's also worth noting that Zeman is perhaps the most Russo-friendly politician in Europe, one of the most Russian-friendly politicians in Europe. Alexander, what do you make of this?
Absolutely. He's also, dare I say it, by the way, a wily and experienced political operator, far more successful as a political operator than some of the other people we've been talking about. Because, of course, he has consistently stuck with his guns. And when that spy scandal was conjured up out of thin air a few months ago, with all this nonsense about, you know, warehouses being blown up by Laurel and Hardy, Bashirov and Petrov, he said this is all a load of nonsense. But Babish didn't have the political will and the political nous to see that. And of course, the Social Democrats he was in coalition with didn't see it either. Now, what you have is a what you have against Babish is a cobbled together coalition of groupings, none of which necessarily get on very well with each other. But they've been cobbled together with no other purpose and with no other intention than to bring Babish down. And though Zeman, if he's, you know, able to, might offer Babish the first option of trying to become state prime minister and form a government, given that this grouping has been cobbled together in order to bring him down, and given that it can find coalition partners beyond its, you know, the grouping itself, to create a technical majority, I very, very much doubt that Babish will be able to remain prime minister, irrespective of what Zeman does. Now, can I just add something else?
If Zeman is okay.
If Zeman is okay. Exactly. And, you know, let's not jump about into sort of speculations as to whether or not he's okay. Let's just put that aside for the moment. But think about something else. Does this narrative, this fact about a cobbled together coalition of incompatible parties cobbled together to bring down a political figure, a prime minister, who is suspect so far as the EU combine is concerned. Does that remind you of anything? Well, so it should, because exactly the same is happening in Hungary, where, of course, there are perhaps ultimately much more important elections coming up in April next year. Because there again also, you will find that there is a coalition of different groups and parties, many of them deeply incompatible with each other, parties that bring together the Social Democrats, a left-wing party, by the way, the inheritors of the mantle of the former Communist Party of Hungary, together with the Jobbik Party, who are the inheritors of the tradition, real tradition, by the way, of Hungarian fascism. So you bring all these parties together to bring down Orbán in Hungary, and you do the same, it seems to me, to bring down Babiš in the Czech Republic. And it's just about worked in the Czech Republic. There was, as I said, lots of manipulations and things behind the scenes lead up to this. And the new government that's going to be formed, it's going to be a very weak and fragile one, but it's done its job, because Babiš is going to be pushed out. Zeman, it looks like, is ailing. And of course, with Babiš no longer prime minister, it becomes much easier to find a pro-EU figure to take over as president. So it's again, one has to say this, it's been deftly done. I mean, you know, you can't dispute the skill with which these operations have been carried out.
Yeah, full-scale takeover of the Czech Republic is how I would look at it. You get Babiš out, Zeman now is in intensive care. You put together a very weak government, which doesn't have a very a coordinated policy going forward, just like the EU wants it. And then eventually you pull in Italy in one form or another, and you put some sort of Draghi figure, whether this figure is appointed or perceived to be elected, whatever it is, but you put a Draghi-like figure to be in charge of the country. Czech Republic is wrapped up. And then, like you said, Alexander, you try to employ the same playbook in Hungary. But you got to go up against Hungary and Poland now. Now, you had the decision taken by Poland, which was a bombshell statement, saying that, you know what, we are not going to fold to the EU dictates on our legal system. We believe our legal system takes precedence over Brussels. Hungary came out with a statement and supported Poland. We said on many videos that they're going to first try to pick off Poland, and then they're going to go after Hungary. The elections in Hungary are in April. How are they going to go about this? Because now we can see very clearly Austria down, Czech Republic out. Now I think they're going to focus fully on Poland and then Hungary. There's the legal situation in Poland. Big, big bombshell story there. And then there's the elections in Hungary, where they're going to employ what will be the Czech Republic playbook.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the Polish decision is an extraordinary one, and it's a very, very radical one because, of course, various courts, including, by the way, the German Constitutional Court, have at various times suggested that, in fact, it's inappropriate that, you know, if you have an EU law imposed on Poland which is incompatible with the Polish constitution, then it is absolutely absurd that Poland has to change its constitution to adopt the EU law. I mean, you know, it doesn't work like that. It is a direct blow at Poland's sovereignty. So that's what the Constitutional Court in Poland has said. But that, of course, is absolutely unacceptable to the EU combine, because as far as they're concerned, they don't want sovereignty on the part of member states. They are against it. They want weak member states led by weak leaders. I've said this many times, but that's what they want to see. And they are going to go full out against Poland. Now, they have certain very powerful tools that they can use against Poland. Firstly, Polish society is not divided on the EU. An opinion poll showed that 80% of Poles still support the EU, or at least Polish membership of the EU. Now, the reason for that is historic, because Poland, when it broke away from the Soviet camp, it did so very much as, you know, embracing Europe. And on top of all of that, it's absolutely the case for a very long time, for the first, you know, decades, Poland actually got an awful lot of economic and financial support from the EU because it was seen as so important. So there is a big core of people in Poland who are very pro-EU. And that is a limit on what the Polish government can do. The second thing, the second big tool that Poland, that the EU has over Poland, is that, of course, Poland's economy has boomed largely, or to some extent, not largely, to some extent, because of the support it's had from the EU structural funds and from other forms of EU funding. And Poland has been angling for $57 billion, or euros, I'm sorry, 57 billion euros of support from this pandemic relief slush fund, which we've been talking about. So, given that this is so, the EU is now threatening to withhold that funding from Poland. And given that Poland is a divided country politically, in the sense that the Law and Justice Party, which is the conservative Eurosceptic party in Poland, is almost equal running with the opposition. Given that 80% of Poles support Poland remaining in the EU, and given, as I said, that there is this threat to the Polish economy caused by withholding funding, you can see where this attack is coming, is going. Now, it's not a foregone conclusion that Poland will fold. The Poles are a very proud people, and it's entirely possible that they will interpret this attack on their constitution, on their state, whose independence they fought so hard to achieve, that they will fight and push back. And they will also say, Poland being still a Catholic country, that some of these innovations, these social innovations that the EU is intent on pushing, that this means that they're prepared to hold firm. And I would not discount at all the possibility that there will be a popular rally behind the government in Poland. But don't count on it. It's going to be a very tough battle ahead. And the EU has many tools that it can use against Poland. The one thing I would say is that the leadership of the Law and Justice Party do seem to be made of rather tough characters and people who understand politics very well and who have a clear sense of the nature of the battle that they're fighting. So it's going to be a difficult, evenly matched struggle that's going to be fought out over the next few months.
Yeah, and depending on what happens with Poland, it'll be interesting to see where this puts Orban, what kind of position it puts Orban into come April.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed, absolutely. Because, of course, bear something in mind, all the potential countries that he was relying upon for support are now being picked off. So let's assume that he survives the election in April, which is far from being a foregone conclusion. Or let's assume that Poland falls over the next few months and we have a pro-EU government in Poland. There's a decision made at the level of the EU Council to strip Hungary of its voting rights in the EU institutions, which is a mechanism that is allowed under the Treaty of Lisbon. Previously, Hungary could have counted upon support from Austria, the Czech Republic, and Poland to resist that. If those three countries are gone and no other country vetoes it, Hungary loses its voting rights. Of course, if that is done in the run-up to the April elections, let's say the Polish government collapses over the next few months, and there is a new government in Poland which is pro-EU and anti-Orban, then, of course, you can see how the situation could be set up, that the Hungary is stripped of its voting rights on the EU Council before the April election. And, of course, that April election then becomes a showdown, with Orban going into that election essentially as the person who has, in effect, been thrown out of the EU. And then, given that there are still supporters of the EU in Hungary, you could see how support for them could crystallise, and they could come after Orban. So this is what's happening. We're seeing, as I said, a systematic attempt to isolate Orban at the same time as there are attempts to weaken him from below. It's not all against him. I mean, you know, there's events in France. I did a programme for locals, I think it'll be up soon, about the rise of Eric Zemmour in France, and he's spoken out in support of Hungary and Poland. We'll see what happens with him. I'm far from convinced that he's going to become the next French president, but he might change the weather. So it's the game is not fully played out. But at the moment, it's the EU that is winning the tricks. They've broken Austria. They've broken the Czech Republic. They're pushing hard on Poland, and they're coming after Orban.
Follow us on Locals, everybody, the Durant.locals.com, and go to the Durant shop, 10% off when you use the code Real News, and Odyssey, BitChute, Rumble, and Super U, where we post all our videos. You'll find a link to everything down below. Wow. All right, Alexander, we'll leave it there. We will leave it there. What a turn of events. Just when they think the EU is done.
Oh, no. I mean, they may be terrible at everything, but in these sort of games, they're extremely skilled, and you know, one, let's be frank about that, and you know, acknowledge it.
Yeah, they play dirty, and they know how to win when
exactly.
They play dirty.
Exactly.
All right, take care, everybody.